This is Your Calls Media Roundtable. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to discuss the latest blockbuster investigation by the New York Times detailing how the Trump administration gave the United Arab Emirates access to high-powered artificial intelligence chips just days after receiving a $2 billion investment in the Trump family's cryptocurrency firm. According to New York Times reporter Eric Lipton and his colleagues, in the middle of both deals was Mr. Trump, a president who has used his power to enrich himself in ways that have little modern precedent, at least in the United States. It is more reminiscent of business customs in the Persian Gulf, where money-making and governance are blended in the hands of the ruling families. Eric Lipton is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist for the New York Times, known for his reporting on a wide array of topics, including Pentagon spending and toxic chemical regulations. Hi, Eric. Thanks to you and your colleagues for another blockbuster investigation, and thank you for joining us.
Yep, thank you for having me.
Just a quick basic question. A lot of people are still not familiar with cryptocurrency. Can you tell us about how it works and then tell us about the Trump family's cryptocurrency firm?
Sure. Well, the Trump family actually has three, four, or five, I mean, it's just hard to keep track, different crypto ventures that they've started since last year. The one that we wrote about in this particular story is one that was started in October, shortly before the election. It's called World Liberty Financial. And World Liberty went from becoming, a company that didn't exist in October. And it was co-founded by Trump and Steve Witkoff, his Middle East advisor, and Trump's sons, Eric and Don Jr. and Brandon are all involved, as well as Zach Witkoff and Alex Witkoff, the sons of Steve Witkoff, are involved. It went from essentially having, no money and no business to being one of the largest, it's one of their issuance, the things that they've issued is called a stablecoin. They're now one of the largest stablecoin companies in the world, and they have hundreds of millions of dollars of investment capital. And they have $2.7 billion worth of stable coins in their treasury. And all but overnight, they went from becoming nothing to becoming one of the largest players in the crypto industry. And that business, much of the net revenue from that company goes to the Trumps and the Witkoffs. And also they are huge owners of tokens that the governance tokens that essentially own the company. And so it overnight created billions of dollars of paper wealth for the Trump family. In all of the decades of work by Trump and his family in terms of, real estate, Trump Tower, hotels, golf courses, the Mar-a-Lago, all the things we've been hearing about for years, they have made more money so more quickly than ever before with this crypto venture. And so that's one of, then there's the meme coin, then there's a Bitcoin mining operation. Trump Media, which is the company that sponsored the Truth Social, which is a failing business. It never really made any money. They're transitioning Truth Social into a Bitcoin company. So they are kind of aggressively pursuing ways to make money with crypto right now, at the same time as the president is appointing the head of the Securities and Exchange Commission and is also shutting down multiple investigations of companies crypto companies that have actually, in several cases, been investors in World Liberty. So that's the backdrop of and they're the products that World Liberty offers. A stablecoin is sort of conceptually something like a money market, where you put a dollar in and it's pegged to a dollar and it maintains its one-to-one match. That's the concept of a stablecoin. It has the term stablecoin. And the idea is that you can then use cash to buy a stablecoin, and they have 2.7 billion stablecoins in their treasury now, but 2 billion of that came from the United Arab Emirates. So most of it came from this one transaction. It's the largest stablecoin transaction in the history of crypto when that money came in from the UAE. But the stablecoin, they make money off of that stablecoin because the stablecoins are able to maintain their one-to-one match. They're worth a dollar, and each stablecoin is supposed to be consistently worth a dollar. They take the money that comes into their treasury, and with something like 80 to 90% of it, they invest in US Treasury bonds. And those Treasury bonds generate a yield, as all Treasury bonds do. But the World Liberty keeps that yield. And that's why the stablecoin business is one of the most profitable chunks of all of crypto, because there isn't much of a use case for most of crypto other than a speculative investment venture. But stablecoins, the companies like Tether, make an enormous, enormous amount of money, because they take that money that you put into the stablecoin, and in order to keep it a one-to-one match, they buy treasury bonds, and then they keep that yield. So that's like, for the $2 billion that the UAE gave to World Liberty, that's tens of millions of dollars a year in yield that becomes, profits for the people that control World Liberty. So those treasury bonds are producing yield, and that yield is not paid back to the owner of the stablecoin. The only thing you get is when you deposit into the treasury is the commitment that it will maintain its one-to-one match, that it will be that one stablecoin will be worth a dollar regardless of what happens to the price of Bitcoin or what happens to the US economy or the global economy. So that's the business that they're in. So far, they're mostly a stablecoin company. They suggest that they're going to move into a broad array of kind of financial things that eventually, I heard Zach Witkoff say, you're going to be able to use the World Liberty token and go to a bodega and use your stablecoins and buy something. That's the vision of these crypto companies, is that eventually stablecoins will become an alternative form of currency and that they'll be broadly accepted. That hasn't happened yet, but that's at least their vision.
And Eric, I'm guessing that a lot of people are having a hard time following this. It's not your explanation. It's just that a lot of people do not know how this works. So cryptocurrency is digital currency. So can you exp is this kind of like a Ponzi scheme? I'm just we're people are just trying to figure out, for something that's not widely known, how are they able to amass so much wealth so quickly on paper?
Well, the well, I mean, the World Liberty, for example, has two different tokens that are traded. One is the governance token, which the Trump family controls the majority of it. And that is now you can buy and sell that token on a crypto exchange. And so the, and it has it's worth like 20 cents per token approximately right now. And it when it was when the when it first came on the market, it was worth pennies. And so that's where the much of the wealth that has come to the Trump family is that token has gone from being worth pennies when it was first issued to being worth like $19 or $20, depending on the day. I mean, the most of what crypto has been about in the couple of decades that it's been around is, at least the decade that it's been popularized. Has been at people who are buying it thinking that it's going to go up in price. Bitcoin has gone up in price, and it has been actually a pretty good investment at the moment. It still does not have a really super clear use case, other than if you want to move money across international borders really quickly without having to go through banks that have to transfer it from different currencies. You can just transfer your stablecoin from one person to another in any place in the world, and that's a pretty easy thing to do, because a stablecoin, one person buys it, one person sells it, and then that's transferring basically something that's worth a dollar. Can I explain why crypto has become such a massive phenomenon? I mean, that's a big and complicated question. What we know is that the United States under Trump has intensely embraced the idea that crypto is going to become and should become, and the United States wants to play a leadership role in helping it become an alternative form of currency that effectively is competing with both the US dollar and with credit cards. I mean, if stablecoins really become a huge deal, then Walmart or Amazon will accept payments in stablecoins, because then they don't have to pay credit card fees. And maybe stablecoins, Congress recently passed legislation that kind of essentially recognizes stablecoins by the US government for the first time. And maybe they are about to become part of the major form of commerce. And if that's the case, then these companies are going to continue to make an enormous amount of money, and the Trump family is going to profit from that.
So in this explosive piece you wrote with your colleagues, Anatomy of Two Giant Deals, the UAE got chips, the Trump team got crypto riches, You write about how Steve Witkoff, Trump's Middle East envoy, paid a visit to the coast of Sardinia, a stretch of the Mediterranean Sea crowded with superyachts, this summer, and he was meeting with Sheikh Tanun bin Syed Al Nahyan, who controls 1.5 trillion of the Emirati's sovereign wealth. And over the past couple of months, they've become business partners, as you write, testing the limits of ethics rules while enriching the president, his family, and his inner circle. At the heart of the relationship are two multi-billion dollar deals. One involved a crypto company founded by the Witkoff and Trump families that benefited both of them financially. The other involved a sale of valuable computer chips that benefited the Emiratis economically. How did you all first find out about this?
I mean, what happened was in May that these deals were announced. And first, it was Zach Witkoff in Dubai, and my colleague David Yaffe Bellamy was actually there in Dubai when at a crypto conference where Zach Witkoff on the stage announced that they had gotten this $2 billion investment from a company called MGX, which is backed by the Sovereign Wealth Fund of. In the United Arab Emirates. It's Abu Dhabi, which is one of the Emirates. That's where the money comes from specifically. But what Zach announced on the stage there is, well, you know, ladies and gentlemen, you know, I'm announcing that World Liberty has just got a $2 billion, you know, transfer of money from MGX, this company that Tak Noon is the chairman of. And in a, overnight, World Liberty has gone from this, you know, kind of obscure, you know, not it was always famous because Trump's association, but from this company that really had no real treasury beyond, you know, some investors that into one of the world's largest stablecoin operators. And it was a transformative investment by the United Arab Emirates and Tak Noon. So that deal happens in early May. And then 2 weeks later, Trump is flying over to the Middle East for one of his first international trips. And while there in the Middle East, he announces that the United States is signing a memorandum of understanding, effectively, that's allowing 500,000 of NVIDIA's most advanced chips to be transferred annually to the United Arab Emirates to allow them to become one of the world's most important AI and data center operators, and that kind of that one of the largest data centers outside the United States anywhere in the world will be built outside of Abu Dhabi with NVIDIA chips that are some of the most advanced chips, like these marvels of technology that are transforming the global economy and to the world that we live in as we speak. And that the United States was at least conceptually agreeing to allow those chips to be transferred to the UAE, despite concerns about the national security implications of that transfer. And so those two deals were announced. And so the thing that we were is like, well, how are those two deals related? And that was the thing that we then spent like 2 months with reporters from around the world, from in Taiwan and California and London, in New York and in Washington. To dig into that and to understand that in fact that these two deals were intertwined, and that Tak Noon is an executive at both of the companies that were involved in the deals, that the money came from the sovereign wealth fund, that Steve Witkoff was involved in, his family benefited from the chips, I'm sorry, from the crypto deal, but he also participated in discussions relating to the chips deal and actually, you know, was nudging people to expand what the UAE could get out of the transaction. And so he was, you know, that created an appearance that he was, you know, participating in a collection of deals that was going to benefit his own family. And that's the thing that we examined. And then, in fact, there was one executive, Fiak Larkin is his name. He works for one of, you know, the Tak Noon's subsidiaries called G42. And Fiak Larkin was, that's the company that's going to get the advanced NVIDIA chips. The G42 assigned Fiat to the work with World Liberty as it was preparing to launch a stablecoin. So here's a company that the UAE was seeking access to these chips, and it, one of its executives was assigned to work with World Liberty as it was launching its stablecoin in advance of that $2 billion coming in from UAE. So these deals were more intertwined than the public was aware of. And that's what we examined in the story, and we documented that, in fact, that you know, as well, the story opens in Sardinia because what we learned was that Witkoff this summer was on Tuck Noon's yacht in Sardinia. And so that, they also have a kind of a personal relationship. The different nations of the Middle East, I mean, Qatar gave a 747 to the United States, for Trump to have another Air Force One. UAE is put $2 billion into World Liberty. UAE also is an investor in TikTok, and is helping Trump resolve the TikTok problem. MGX, the same company that gave the $2 billion to World Liberty, is also investing in TikTok. And so there's a fair number, in fact, of these of players in the Middle East that are kind of driving money towards Trump-related interest. It's almost like a competition, the plane or to World Liberty, as they vie for kind of an alliance with the United States. These rivals in the Middle East. And so, I've written actually another story that we did earlier this year, was looking at that at the 747 deal from Qatar and how that came together. And Witkoff was the key person in that one as well. He was the one that turned it from. The DoD had been looking at the possibility of buying that plane from Qatar, to Witkoff then intervened with top officials in Qatar, and then next thing you know, it became a donation. And Witkoff also has had financial deals with Qatar and his company. There was a hotel that he was having struggling with in New York that Qatar actually ended up buying out a couple not too long before he became the Middle East envoy. So there's all these kind of intermingling of private interest and public interest that is kind of it's actually really hard for the average person in the United States or in the world to keep track of. There's so many of them and they're so complex, but we've been writing stories to try to document them. And I think that there's a, even if it, has little impact in terms of changing what's happening, it's really important to document these things really thoroughly with specificity. And that's what we've been doing.
Yeah, and you all do such a great job. Thank you. We're almost out of time. David Sacks is also in your piece. He is another key White House official with ties to tech in the Middle East. He's a longtime venture capitalist. He's the administration's AI and crypto czar. This is a newly created position. He shapes tech policy even as he continues to work in Silicon Valley. In our remaining minutes, what has been the response to your piece? And why is Trump so closely connected to these countries? Is it mostly about money and power? What have you uncovered?
I mean, like for example, there's a real estate developer named Dar El Arkan, which has a British subsidiary called Dar Global, that has, I think it's eight different real estate projects currently planned with the Trump family, that they're paying millions of dollars in branding deals to the Trump family. And so the Saudi Arabia, Qatar, UAE. I mean, again, I think it goes back to this. There's a almost a rivalry underway. Instead of having like a military kind of face off in the Middle East for these countries that are trying to gain clout with the United States, the way that they're doing it to some extent is by doing deals with people that are, in the Trump family or connected to the Trump family. And that's the way, but that's the way the Middle East works. The Middle East, the mixing, as you said, as reading from our piece, there's a blurring of lines. The royal family is the government, is the country. That's the way they do business there. And they don't see that as a conflict. That's just the way that things operate. It's not the way we do business in the United States, at least historically. But what we're seeing is that that's become almost becoming a norm here as well.
In the response to your piece, a few senators are calling for investigation. Senator Mark Warner and Alyssa Slotkin. They've asked inspectors general at the Commerce and State Departments to investigate whether Trump administration officials are violating ethics in these multi-billion dollar deals. Do you have any updates on that? We have about a minute left.
No, I mean, one of the issues is that the Trump DOJ, the Inspector Generals, the Office of Congressional Ethics, this Office of Special Counsel, I mean, all of these things, the congressional oversight, mostly been neutered. There isn't really much accountability and oversight right now in Washington. So yes, those are investigation that has been requested from Commerce and State. We'll see whether or not they take it up. I wouldn't be surprised if they don't. To some extent, the account ability that's remaining is our ability to spend the resources of the subscribers of the New York Times help us with to have to spend the time to dig into these things. We publish the stories, and then what happens is unclear, but at least it's documented. There isn't really much of an accountability process left right now, given that what Trump has done to dismantle that, the infrastructure of accountability in Washington.
Eric Lipton is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative journalist for The New York Times. He and his colleagues are out with this piece, Anatomy of Two Giant Deals. The UAE got chips, the Trump team got crypto riches. You can find this piece and others at KALW.org, click news, and then your call. Eric, huge thanks to you and your colleagues for your reporting, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.